Welcome, John. Welcome to Cologne. This is a Cologne audience, Cologne citizens who are used to hear great news and great compliments about their city. They will be disappointed to hear that if I use the track record of your German activities, the list of your impact in Germany, Cologne runs third. Frankfurt runs second. Your work with the HR Big Band, Frankfurt Radio Big Band. And to my impression, Berlin, the capital, runs first because you have been teaching there from 2005 to 2016. So why runs Cologne only third?
Maybe you're right, but Cologne was the first for sure, because when I first came to Germany, most of my friends were in Bob Brookmeyer's band. Most of them lived here. Most of them went to school here. So when I first came to Germany, this was the main city that I would go to.
To please the Cologne audience, I must add that you have been drumming for Florian Ross in 2002.
Yes.
You played with WDR Big Band, if that's correct.
Yeah.
You performed drums with Jürgen Friedrich on his album Mono Suite, and you performed frequently with Hayden Chisholm, who partly is Cologne citizen.
Yeah, also Ansgar Streepens played on some of his recordings. So he was someone that I knew from the Brookmeyer band. Frank Reinshagen.
Yeah.
Played on a record of his many years ago.
So you're not a stranger in town?
No, no, no.
But it's true that Berlin runs first. The longest stay you had in Germany from 2005 to 2016 was in Berlin. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about your Berlin experience. What did you do there? What did you teach?
I taught at the Jazz Institute Berlin. I taught drums and composition, and usually had some kind of ensemble that was doing all different kinds of things. Sometimes rhythm work, sometimes more like theater.
What does that mean, teaching composition? I assume jazz composition. Did you teach how to write within the 32-bar form, or what did you teach?
Just composition. For me, jazz, you can't really codify it, and so you can't really teach it. Jazz composition, you could learn from records or books, but most students just need basic composition work. They need to learn how to write a melody, how to voice lead, to learn about counterpoint, orchestration, notation. Those are the things I would usually teach, very basic things. Even also on the drums, it was usually basic things, how to play quarter notes with all your feet and your hands at the same time, and how to play a shuffle, and very, very basic things is what I always felt like the students really needed. And then if they had that, then they could just do whatever they wanted to.
But we're speaking about teaching on an academic level, right?
Yeah. University.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, teaching jazz, is there no such thing as a jazz canon that you can teach? What about standards? What about Monk?
Yeah.
Composition.
That's jazz history. You have to teach history, of course. Yeah. History is a big part of it. So yeah, that's another thing I was doing a lot with, especially with the drummers, is making sure they knew who Baby Dodds was, and going back and making sure they had heard all the great drummers before them.
Yeah.
So sure, history is important.
Yeah. Is there such thing as jazz composition?
Well, I mean, if you compose and you use improvisation and some kind of, it used to be swing rhythm, and now maybe it's some other kind of groove. So if you incorporate composition and then improvisation and then some sort of groove element, it's basically what people call jazz composition. But I just call it composition. And then it happens to have improvisation in it and maybe some, you know, important groove element.
What was the part or the importance of your own work in your teaching? Did you touch your own work or did you leave it completely out?
Well, if a student was interested, I would answer questions. I try not to use my own work, but sometimes I would use it just as a model. If I was talking about something and they didn't really know what I was talking about, I could say, okay, well, here's a piece I show you that I wrote, and this is what I was talking about. Mm. But for jazz composition, if I was going to use a model, I mean, I wouldn't use myself. I would use Bob Brookmeyer or Duke Ellington or Gil Evans, and those would be better models.
Coming to your own work now, you already stressed the two key words from this part of our talk, composition and improvisation. And I have the impression, listening to your recordings, listening to your works, and just I printed out from the internet the list of your works, which is quite astonishing. It's a lot. And I have the impression that your work mainly is composition, is composing.
Yeah, for sure.
We have had a talk, an extensive talk, 6 years ago. And the most interesting thing in that was something I would call heretical. Because you said improvisation, considered to be the prime element of jazz, but you said improvisation might be the prime element of jazz. It's not the prime element on the music that I write, and now it comes. One thing I learned from Burkmeier, you don't need improvisation. If there's improvisation, it needs to be for a specific reason, with a place to start and a place to end. So improvisation is only a small part in your work. Isn't that a contradiction to the general jazz aesthetic?
There's always been some friction between composers and improvisers and jazz composition and jazz musicians, because the composers, you know, want to work some things out more ahead of time, and a lot of jazz musicians just want to do it right in the moment and be completely spontaneous. So, yeah, there's a little bit of friction there. But if you have jazz musicians play your music, then it's jazz. So even if there's not improvisation, they don't view the printed page as the Bible. So they usually look at it and say, oh, well, that's a good idea. Maybe I'll play that. I'll probably play that. But I also play with some people and they'll just say, yeah, that's cool what you wrote, but you know, I'm hearing something else, so I'm not gonna play it, you know. Now, if I had a whole band of that, then what would be the point of writing? But if I have a few people like that, then it works out pretty well, you know. Yeah. You have a few people that don't follow the rules, and that's jazz also. Yeah, I think you can have music that's not, doesn't have improvisation in it, like overtly improvisation, but the musicians are going to do something with it anyway.
So that means there can be music that is little or none improvised and it's still jazz.
Yeah.
So what's the jazz elements in that music which is not improvised? How would you declare that to somebody from the outside who comes from the classical world, who is known to the world of sonatas and fugues, etc.?
Right. Well, there's definitely interpretation in classical music, but with jazz music, most people that get into jazz, they want to improvise. So you're giving them this music and there's no improvisation in it, they're gonna look everywhere they can for the improvisation. Like, I'm just gonna play this note and put a little in it. It's not written there, but that's what I'm gonna do. So I'm gonna, you know, put my own thing in it. That's what makes it maybe jazz. I've played with some classical musicians, they're more just trying to play exactly what you wrote. And so if you write something and you know exactly what you want, and you know if they play that, it will sound great, then that's perfect, you know? But if you also want some people to like put their own thing into it and play things that you can't write, that can't be written down, then, you know, you can go more to jazz musicians, or now there's a new, you know, a new type of musician that can play classical music but also improvise. So that's a new thing that's just come up in the last maybe 10 years. So they don't have to be jazz musicians. But the one other element is the groove part. So if you have people that can play without a conductor and they are really, you know, understand the elements of groove music, then that could be jazz. But I think in maybe 20 years, I think it's possible there'll be major orchestras where everyone can improvise. And then the next step would be where everyone can groove.
The reason that you put the emphasis on composition, is that a product that you mostly, at least to my impression, compose for big bands? Is that a direct consequence out of your desire to compose and less for small ensembles?
No, I don't really like most big band music. I write a lot for my Claudia Quintet and other groups. Big band just has more people, but I'm not really into big band music, or I don't think of myself as a big band composer.
Well, that's interesting. You don't like big band music. You consider yourself as a big band composer, but
here we are.
You are hailed. I mean, people consider you to be one of the innovators of the big band tradition. Is that outside and inside?
I played a lot of big band music when I was younger, and I just got frustrated with it, and I wanted it to be something different. So that's maybe where the innovation part comes. But also, I thought that innovation was jazz. That's what jazz was, is, you know, so it's, you're trying to innovate.
But
so
there's no innovation per se. You must have an aim what you innovate within a certain format. And I'm sure you have a very clear target, what to change and what to keep within the big band tradition.
Well, you keep the lineup. So you have, you know, five saxes and four trumpets. And the good part about that is I can play this music in Cologne and I can play it in Berlin and Basel and Frankfurt and Lisbon. And, yeah. You know, so that's what's great about that. I'm not sure if I think about keeping anything else in there, but that part is set up.
But could you verbalize your input into the big band format? Is it possible to verbalize, or is it something that you can't talk about?
I'm in the group of people that consider jazz the type of music that you can't talk about. It's intangible. So it's that thing, that next thing. It doesn't have a name yet. It doesn't have to be something completely 100% different, but I'm just kind of always looking for something different than what I have done and hopefully what other people have done. Yeah, when I played big band music earlier on, I was just always thinking, oh, why does it have to be like this and why does it have to be like that? So, you know, I had a list of things that I was wondering. There's a sort of formula for some jazz arranging where there's, you know, there's an introduction and there's a sax soli and there's a shout chorus and, you know, that kind of thing. So the conventions of big band I'm not interested in. Other people have done that already really well.
Could you name some?
I don't need to do that. Bob Brookmeyer. Bob Brookmeyer and Bob Brookmeyer. Duke Ellington and Gil Evans.
That's history.
Jim McNeely. Maria Schneider.
Maria Schneider.
Maria Schneider, I would say.
If I could suggest at least one element that, at least to my impression, you put into big band music, which hasn't been there before, at least not at such an extent, I would say it's repetition, and I would even call it minimal music. But I know from an earlier talk that you are somehow skeptic about minimal music.
Anybody who writes minimal music is skeptical of minimal music.
Okay. Even the minimalists.
Yes. Yeah. They don't like that word.
Yeah. But use a different word which we understand that we are talking about.
Groove.
Groove.
Yeah. Groove has repetition in it.
But Marcus Miller is not a minimal musician. It's a groove musician per se.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't call his music be influenced by minimal music.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't use marimba and vibraphone. When I think of minimal music, I think of some kind of engine that's going. There's this engine, and then over that engine, there's this soaring thing that could be a melody, or it could be just chords, or some sort of cloud thing. Yeah, I like that. Very, very slow-moving harmony.
But repetition, right? Ostinato.
Yeah. I think that's coming more, even from a lot of minimalist composers, that's coming more from African music and maybe Balinese music, which I love, this element of drumming and the repetition that you find in African music. If you put pitches to that, there you go, and then, you know, put some slow-moving chords over that, and you've got Steve Reich.
Have you ever had resonance from the real minimal guys to your music?
No. I work with Meredith Monk, who also would not call herself a minimalist, but is connected to that scene. So she's a very big part of my life. I don't think I've met anybody else.
Yeah. We have to talk about Bob Brookmeyer.
Yes.
You mentioned him several times
yes.
now, and he is possibly the most important figure in your musical development. Although many people would say John Hollenbeck doesn't sound like Bob Brookmeyer at all.
Which he would be happy about.
Yeah.
He wasn't so happy when he would hear music from his students that sounded a little bit like his, or a lot like his. And some of his students wouldn't even do it on purpose. They just loved his music. And that's a compliment to a teacher, but it's not the highest compliment. The highest compliment would be when a student of yours does something that doesn't sound like you. They took what you gave them, but then they made it their own.
I have an impression that the highest compliment can be found in the many quotes of John Hollenbeck.
He was very nice to me.
But anyway, what did you learn from him?
Well, I played in his band a lot, so a lot of what I learned was from playing in his band. And actually, in this band, Marco Lochner and Oliver, they were part of the first band. It took a little while, but the sound that band got was like a beautiful sound that no other band sounds like, you know, and he did that. I don't even know exactly how he did it, but he talked about French horns all the time. He wanted everybody to sound like French horns. He didn't want to hear any short notes, only long notes. Long, long notes and short, long notes, but no short notes. Sometimes he had this thing where we would just work on playing together, just one note, you know, that kind of thing. And he was always pushing forward with his music. In that time, it might not sound revolutionary, but he was innovating in form, and he was also innovating by letting some things go, like letting his very crunchy chromatic harmonies, letting that go, and just doing the whole piece in C major, as he used to say, and then see if he could innovate within C major and within form to try to see what he could do formally.
I found one quote that combines two major influences on your work. It's a quote by you from 2011. The idea that you only need one cell, one little idea to write a whole piece, and that is okay to create theater in your music, is derived from Brock Buchmeier and Muhal Richard Abrams. Mm-hmm. Just another very different source, which you would not hear in your music.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it what you learned from him?
Yeah. Yeah, I lived in the same building as Muhal, but I was too afraid to talk to him. But they had revolving doors, so sometimes I would be coming in and he'd be going out and I would just see him. And that was a thrill. But he gave a lecture once that I went to, Banff Jazz Workshop. The whole lecture, he drew a dot on the board, and then the whole lecture was about the dot. But the idea was that dot could be anything, and that dot was the beginning of your piece. Bob Brookmeyer talked about that also, but in a different way. Muhal, the other thing that he mentioned a lot was theater. You know, and Duke Ellington, and bringing elements of theater into your music. Just that one lecture. The other thing that he did, which was very nice, is I was at this workshop, and the drum teacher, Smitty Smith, he had not shown up yet, and they were supposed to play a faculty concert, and he told Dave Holland to get me. So I got to play with Dave Holland, and Steve Coleman, and Kenny Wheeler, and Muhal on a concert.
Another one who is applauding your drumming is Drew Griss, the bass player. Mm. He said his drumming, your drumming, is unjustly ignored. There is no excess or showiness in his drumming. It's just music all the time.
Oh, that's nice. Drew's my favorite bass player. He's the best.
But this touches a very interesting subject. You're working at least in two roles. Let's concentrate on your active two roles. It's a composer. And it's the drummer. Who comes first from your point of view?
It changes every day. Mostly the composer, yeah. If I had to choose, it would be composing. Early on, I didn't compose, so it was drumming early on in my life. And then now composing has taken over, so I don't practice drumming so much, but when I do, usually I stop in the middle and start composing. It just takes over. I get some idea, and then I leave the drum set. Yeah, I like drumming a lot though, but composing.
What happens if you discover, quote unquote, your cell, a cell of an idea, a cell of a composition?
Mm-hmm.
How do you proceed?
Well, I would record it in some way so I don't forget it. So maybe I have to write it down or sing it or just make sure that it's not gonna go away. And then it's basically like you take it into the laboratory and you stretch it and you put it this way and then you put it this way and you shake it up and then each time you do that you get another thing and so then you write that down and then at the end of that you have all this other material that's like the son and daughter and cousin of this material. And then you also know more about the material. Now you can, you know, you can proceed to use some of those things together. And it's like a family of materials.
If I withdraw from the metaphorical part of your answer, I have the impression that you write on paper?
Yeah, Sometimes I use a computer or a tape recorder. It's different.
But how can you shake a note on paper?
Well, some of it maybe is in your head, but you're just trying to see what else that thing could be. So instead of looking at it literally, like, there it is, that's what it is, you're also thinking, oh, it's also this. Like, it could be this, too. So you're just kind of seeing what else it can be besides what it's shown you. Because sometimes something will come to you, and it will come to you as a baseline. And so instead of right away saying, oh, it's a baseline, you say, maybe that's a baseline. And then you write down, maybe baseline. Then that goes away, because now you have already, it could be a baseline. Then you take it away from that, and you see what else it could be. And it could be a chord, or it could be a melody. Well, those are musical elements, but a lot of times cells are not musical. They're numbers or words or something like that. And then you have to translate them to music.
But how do you get from those details, from those particles, to their sum, to a form? And when do you have the impression the form is right?
Sometimes you just know because your body goes... Your body tells you if it's really good. I think it's intuition. You see the things, this could be here, and it could be this, and it could also be this, and I could reuse it. And it just starts sparking possibilities, and you just write them down, and the form just keeps working itself out until finally, I don't know, there's never really a finally, but at some point you get at least, okay, this is the version that I'm going with right now because I have to go. And
you even performed a piece by Kraftwerk, The Model, in 2018. Mm-hmm. Kraftwerk is from Düsseldorf, which is the rival city to Cologne, as you know. To me, one of my favorite albums of yours is Songs That I Like, which also has Queen, but I know from an earlier talk that your singer suggested to arrange a piece by Queen, Bicycle Race, and you found a way to overcome your own prejudice somehow. Mm-hmm. Has there been prejudice to perform Kraftwerk? And what is interesting about Kraftwerk?
Right.
It's a mystery to me. Can you explain me what's interesting about Kraftwerk to perform?
I mean, there are extremely innovative group, I think. Just whenever you see even just pictures of the band, it's like, who does that, you know? Who wears all the same outfits and only plays keyboards? Like who would do that, you know?
They're innovators.
Yeah. I think they're innovators. That song was one of the songs that was recommended by Theo Blackman, who had already done a small arrangement by himself, a solo arrangement of that tune. That's just a song that I think most Germans know, and I even knew it, but I didn't know how I knew it. Well, the first project was a little bit more songs like that I knew that I wanted to arrange. That was songs I like a lot. And the second one, songs we like a lot, that was coming more from Theo and more from Kate McGarry. Right now I'm writing songs you like a lot. And that one came from the internet. I had everyone vote, nominate songs. They nominated maybe 150 songs, and then they voted. And so I'm arranging some of those songs. Some of them I don't know, some of them I don't like, but what I found through the project is it didn't matter anymore if I liked it or not.
What's the benefit to arrange music that you don't like?
Well, you get over that thing, because what is liking or not liking? I mean, it's not really a big deal. You can get into the guts of anything, find the cell in there, and then work with it. Also, maybe if you don't like it, you know, you're not treating it like, oh, I can't do anything with this. It's like, no, I don't really like this, so I'm just gonna tear it up and go like this, you know. So for the first time, I'm arranging words on some songs. I've never even thought about doing that before, but I don't like those words, so I'm just gonna move them around, and why not? I'm arranging.
Yeah.
It's been fun. I'm not done yet, but
so far
it's fun.
You're getting closer and closer to John Cage.
Ha, that would be nice.
Are you familiar with John Cage?
Do you like? Of course, sure. Another innovator.
Very generally speaking, have you any idea about the source of your creativity?
No, I don't know, except when I was really young and I first started playing music, even just in my town and in my school, I was immediately trying to find where I could be. Like, oh, this person does this and this person does this, so where I can't do that and I can't do that, like what could I do, you know? So looking for a place that feels like home, but that's not somebody else's home. What I've noticed, I grew up with a lot of great musicians who didn't think like that, J.J. Johnson or someone like that, and then they said, oh, that's what I want to do, and then they just went there, and they find the creativity within that. It's not super unique. Maybe not everyone is looking for this place that's not a home that's a new home.
Have you ever feared to run out of ideas?
The idea with the cell is that anything can be an idea. So you could write a piece based on these red chairs. You could write a piece on this grid up here. Your coat, I like your coat. You know, has texture, has color, has designs.
I haven't worn it for years.
It's very nice.
Especially for you.
Oh, thank you.
No, it's, I'm not joking.
Yeah, I like it. So, you know, there's another idea.
Thank you so much, John Hornbeck, that you were here. I enjoyed our conversation very much.
Thank you.
Dankeschön. Thank you.